Welcome to Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Want to connect with Howie? Email him at howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. Now here's your host, Howie Silberger.
Hi, I'm Howie Silberger, and this is Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. I know it's been a little while since I've done a show, but unfortunately things happen in life that stop you from doing other things that you really wanted to do. I'm happy to be back, and I hope that you accept my apologies for being away for so long. Now, so much has happened since the last show that I'm kind of playing a little bit of catch-up. The Americas have imploded, with Jew hatred reaching an all-time high. Israel is still at war with Hamas, although they should have eradicated them over a year ago. And the United States of America, now under the leadership of Donald Trump, is still not playing nice with Israel. Jews in North America are in serious trouble. A recent article in the online newspaper, The Free Press, is headlined, "A Pogrom is Brewing in Canada." The article explains that the level of anti-Jewish sentiment in Canada has reached a point where it has exceeded the anti-Jewish sentiment that existed before World War II. That's right, Jews in Canada are in greater danger than Jews were before World War II, before the Holocaust. Some examples shared by the article include signs banning Jews from golf courses. That's pretty reminiscent of the signs of 1940s and 50s, which said no Jews and no dogs allowed. There are open calls for jihad and globalizing the Intifada on the streets of Toronto and Montreal. And the police are standing like statues and watching the continuous provocation against the Jewish population. When Jewish activists like Mayor Weinstein from Canada's Jewish Defense League or Ezra Levant from Rebel News, an online Canadian news site, stand up to the Jew haters, they are the ones who are arrested. In Toronto, in Canada, it's okay to stand on the street and yell, "Kill the Jews," but it's not okay to be a Jew that doesn't want to die. But that's not all. Over the past few years, there have been so many examples of the Canadian authorities just not caring about the Jewish population and allowing pro-Hamas mobs to run wild. For example, in September 2024, protesters sympathetic to Hamas and the resistance jubilantly rallied outside a Jewish retirement facility in Ottawa where several Holocaust survivors live, and where 60% of the residents suffer from dementia. Chants of "Go back to Europe and we want bullets and missiles" in Arabic could be heard from their bedrooms. I remember its day in 2024 at Sir Robert Borden Public School in Ottawa, where this large Jewish student body, a Palestinian protest song, was the only song played during an event to honor Canadian soldiers. When asked on the peculiar choice of music, Principal Aaron Hobbs said it was chosen to add some diversity and inclusion to a day usually about a white guy who has done something related to the military. There have been numerous incidents where, in predominantly Jewish neighborhoods, protesters have dressed up like Hamas terrorists, including October 7 mastermind Yair Sinwar. Hundreds of pro-Hamas supporters surrounded the Holocaust Museum in Montreal in March of 2024, where they shouted "Death to Israel" and "Death to the Jews." At a softball game for teenage girls between Canada and Israel as part of last year's Canada's Cup Women's International Softball Championship, which took place in Surrey, British Columbia, protesters stood on the sidelines wearing keffiyehs and holding signs that read, "Israel's a genocidal state," with another equating Israel with Nazi Germany. In April, a pro-Hamas rally was staged in Winnipeg, just steps away from a Jewish community center where children attend school and daycare. During the Israel's official Day of Remembrance for Fallen Soldiers and Victims of Terrorism on April 29th, protesters stood in front of the Beth Emet Beth Yehuda Synagogue in Toronto, waving Palestinian flags. One man wore a sweater that read, "Palestinian Holocaust, never again as now." Earlier this month in Montreal, protesters were filmed chanting, "All Zionists are racist," through megaphones at a Jewish school for students aged 4 to 16 with intellectual disabilities and autism spectrum disorders. Imagine protesting a special needs school. How much lower could you get? It's really vile and disgusting. But that's what they do. They are vile and disgusting people. They are people who are supporting an organization that massacred children, women, innocent men, women, children. They're supporting terrorists. And the government of Canada is standing by and allowing it to happen under the guise of freedom of speech, under the guise of how could we stifle their freedom of speech and allow other people to freely speak. But when we talk about freedom of speech in almost any democratic country, we understand that freedom of speech has limitations. For instance, in the United States of America, you can't get up and yell, "I want to kill the president," without the Secret Service coming after you and investigating you, your family, and every person that you've ever spoken to. In other countries, you can't yell, "Let's overthrow the government," or you can't yell, "Fire in a theater," without being arrested and tried for treason or inciting a dangerous situation or inciting a riot. You just can't say whatever you want. Freedom of speech has limitations. And although we like to be libertarians and say, hey, look, freedom of speech is freedom of speech, we should be allowed to say whatever we want, the truth is that being allowed to say whatever you want could put people into grave danger. For instance, people yelling globalized intifada, although the people who are yelling this may not understand the implications of what they're saying because many of them are really stupid, the reality of the situation is that if people do understand what they're saying and their rallying cry is kill Jews indiscriminately wherever they live, which is what the Intifada is, kill Jews indiscriminately, uprising, kill Jews indiscriminately anywhere they live, then Jewish life in countries that allow people to yell globalized Intifada is in grave danger. But it's not the first time we've heard that Jewish life is in danger in North America, and it won't be the last time we hear this. And so it's time for Jews in North America to make a decision. Do we continue living in cities and countries that obviously don't want us there? Could we continue living in countries and cities where our neighbors are very clearly hating us? How do you go to the supermarket and stand in the supermarket knowing that the person standing in front of you or behind you, given the opportunity, will turn around and turn you into the authorities or will stab you or shoot you to death? It's an extremely scary situation when you think about it. But most Montreal Jews, or most Canadian Jews, don't want to think about it. Most Toronto Jews don't think about this. I've spoken to Jews in Montreal, I've spoken to Jews in Toronto, and this is not on the forefront of their minds that their friends and neighbors are the ones who are protesting in the streets. Their friends and neighbors are the ones who are calling to globalize Intifada. This is not on the forefront of their minds. And that is extremely scary. When Jews who have suffered through centuries of persecution, massacres, murders, holocausts, don't realize the danger that they're in. When people don't realize the danger they're in, it means that they're ready to be slaughtered. And God forbid that this should happen. But a Holocaust in North America or a Holocaust in Europe is not a far-fetched idea anymore. At one point, you'd say Holocaust in North America, Holocaust in Europe, what are you, crazy? But now it's not such a far-fetched idea. Years ago, before he died, Rabbi Meir Kahana put together a museum of a potential Holocaust. I had the opportunity to see that museum after he was assassinated. And he had never opened it. It was never open to the public, but I had an opportunity to tour the museum. It was all completed. It was ready to go. But after he was assassinated, the whole project fell apart, as did his movement. But before they ripped out his building and turned it into a school, I had an opportunity to go in there and take a look at his Museum of the Potential Holocaust. And what was interesting about what the artifacts that he had pulled together, it was mostly newspaper artifacts, mostly newspaper articles, but it was a compilation of articles that showed the level of Jew hatred in the States in the late 1980s, early 1990s, mostly mid to late 1980s. He died in 1990. And the interesting part of it was that his argument that a Holocaust could have happened in the late 80s was accurate. There's no question, based on the material that he had in his museum, there was no question that a Holocaust could have happened at any time. Now we're many years later, we're 40 years later, and Jew hatred has been refined to the point where anti-Zionism is now anti-Jewism. And we see it running rampant in the streets, uncontrolled. And it's scary. It's scary to the Jews who are living in these countries. It's scary. And the only solution, the only thing that Jews are saying in North America now is that if anything ever happens to us, thank God we have the State of Israel. But we shouldn't be relying on the State of Israel to come and save us. When you see the danger coming, this is what Judaism teaches us. When you see your enemy approaching you, you either fight back or you run away. Jews have not fought back. They hide in their hovels, they rally in their buildings, and they stand behind armies of security guards and metal detectors. They haven't really fought back. They haven't tried to reclaim their land, reclaim the areas that they live in, reclaim the streets. In Montreal, they recently had a Yom HaAtzmaut, the Israel Independence Day a celebration, which was usually held in downtown Montreal. But they moved it to the Jewish neighborhood this year for safety concerns. Now, I'm not sure if there was a threat against them or if they just figured that nobody would come downtown because the Arabs are rioting downtown almost every day, yelling death to the Jews. So I'm not sure if they just didn't want to go and confront the Arabs or if they were afraid that nobody was going to show up if they kept it downtown. So they put it into a park in the Jewish neighborhood. The park in the Jewish neighborhood, they had half the amount of people that usually show up to the thing. So there you go. But, you know, if I criticize them, they're going to say, well, we could never win. If we would have done it downtown, nobody would have come. And it would look really bad for, you know, Israel's support. So it's a catch-22 for a lot of these organizations that want to support Israel, but can't because of Jew hatred and the lack of governmental support for Jew hatred. So the last thing I want to say about Canada, and I know this the focus the last few minutes has been Canada. Last thing I want to say about Canada is they just recently had an election where they had a choice to continue with the Jew-hating government of the Liberal Party or to elect a more supportive government in the Conservative Party. And the majority of the Canadian population chose to re-elect the Liberals. So it just shows where the population's mind is and how dangerous and volatile the situation is in Canada. It's time for Canadian Jews to go home. Now, the savior, or so to speak, at least he's been depicted that way, of the Jewish people in the United States was supposed to be Donald Trump. Donald Trump was the president that supported the Jewish people. He's the president who moved the American embassy to Jerusalem in his first term. He's the president who has a Jewish daughter and Jewish grandchildren. And the Jewish community had a lot of faith in Donald Trump. But a report in the Jerusalem Post, a recent report in the Jerusalem Post, has said that Donald Trump is maybe considering recognizing a Palestinian state, unilaterally recognizing a Palestinian state. Now, Bibi Netanyahu has said that the differences in opinion between the Americas and Israel are very slim and almost non-existent. But at the end of the day, these kind of reports don't just come out of nowhere. There are insiders in every administration, every political administration, which have release information to the press. Some of it's real, some of it's fake, some of it's released for political reasons, some of it's released to kind of move or sway the population one way or the other. Some of it's released to sway politicians before meetings. There are many reasons why things are leaked to the press. But if this is being leaked to the press, We don't know how this is going to end. We don't know what direction this is going to go in. And this is a weekly show, so by the time you hear this may be later on in the week after it was recorded. By the time you hear this, this may have all been resolved already. But it's kind of scary to think that the United States would betray their closest ally like that. But then again, the United States has been betraying all their allies. Tariff wars with Canada and Mexico. Donald Trump seems to have switched his mind now that he's in his final term in office. It's vengeance for him. and he doesn't see any repercussions for doing whatever he wants to do. So he's just implementing anything he could think of, anything he wants to do, in order to build a legacy of some kind. In my humble opinion, if he turns his back on all his allies, including Israel, then the legacy will be that he's a spineless traitor. And it's an unfortunate legacy for a man who built up a reputation in the first presidency as somebody who was maybe not moralistic, but at least had common sense and was able to look at a situation and understand the common sense of the situation. I don't know if that's the case anymore. It's very unfortunate, but the world is very volatile right now, and the Jews are in the middle of this volatility. I'm hoping and praying that they're able to survive it. I'm hoping and praying that at one point the Jews will get a break, and at one point Jews will be able to live in peace anywhere they are, whether it be in Israel, in North America, in Europe, that Jews will somehow be able to live in peace. I know it's almost a pipe dream. I know it hasn't happened in centuries, but I really hope that at one point or another, this is what's going to happen to the Jewish population. It's a scary situation. I'm telling you, I think about this a lot, and it's kind of scares me. Move on to Hamas and the war with Hamas in Gaza. So Gaza is a really tiny place. The whole place is 35 miles long. And I think it's 12 or 13 miles wide, and there's millions of people living in this stretch of land. And I know that Israel is a moralistic army who tries to reduce collateral damage as much as possible. I understand the concept of preserving life and not killing innocents for no reason. And I understand that there are still a few, not very many, but a few hostages that are still alive. The majority of the hostages being held now are just bodies. And there are still a few hostages being held alive that the families are pressuring the Israeli government to save them, to bring them back alive. I get it. I understand. But to drag a war with Gaza on for 2-3 years seems excessive. Now, I'm not saying that the Israeli government is doing anything wrong. I'm not saying that the Israeli military is doing anything wrong. Just to me, it seems a little excessive. And I believe, I truly believe that Israel could have wiped out Hamas earlier. They could have done what they had to do and wiped out Hamas. I said it at the beginning. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I believed at the beginning, right after October 7th, that sometimes in political life, you have to make some really tough decisions. And one of the tough decisions that the Israeli government faced, and I don't think they made the right decision, was how hard to go into Gaza to release, to save the mission should be, excuse me, to save the hostages or to eradicate Hamas. It was obvious from the beginning that both would not happen. You wouldn't save the hostages if you tried to eradicate Hamas, and you wouldn't eradicate Hamas if you tried to save the hostages. And I understand that, you know, over 200 people were taken hostage, and sacrificing 200 people to wipe out Hamas would have been a heavy toll for the state of Israel. But you would have wiped out Hamas and saved thousands of other lives. So it was a tough decision for the Israeli government, and I don't think they made the right one. Although they did save a lot of hostages. They've lost a lot of soldiers, and this war has been dragging on forever. And they lost a PR war across the world. The victim of October 7th became the aggressor. The aggressor, the terrorist, became the victim. And it's extremely sad that the media, the world media, has decided to embrace the terrorists over the victims and support the terrorist cause over the victim's cause. Another thing that really bothered me when talking about October 7th is that it's been depicted that this whole conflict started on October 7th. There is very few media outlets that have pointed out or have said that the people living in southern Israel, the people living in those kibbutzim and moshavim that were attacked on October 7th, had lived for over 20 years with Hamas bombs landing on their heads. That the children of these towns knew the routine. You hear the siren, you go running to a bomb shelter. This has been an ongoing war for 20-odd years of Hamas launching missiles into Israel, indiscriminately into civilian populations. So those are terrorist attacks. Each one of those missiles is a terrorist attack because it's attacking civilians. It's not attacking military installations, which would be a military attack, which would be an attack against the government. It's attacking civilians, which is a terrorist attack. And the media seems to be ignoring this and saying that the entire conflict started on October 7th, which isn't true at all. Now, we don't have to go back much farther than October. We don't have to go back much farther. We should go back much farther. They say we don't have to go much farther. We should go back much farther. The attack on the southern communities of Israel started in 2015-16 when then-President Ariel Sharon evacuated Gaza of all Jews. And when I say all Jews, I mean all Jews. They took every man, woman, child. They took every animal. They took every business. They took every building. They took every grave. They made the entire Gaza Strip Judenrein, as they said in Germany during World War II, void of Jews. They erased the Jewish population of Gaza. And they put them into refugee camps in Israel. The people who were living in Gaza lived in refugee camps in Israel for years. They went from beautiful neighborhoods to refugee camps, living in tents and huts for years. And American philanthropists spend millions of dollars buying the agricultural businesses that operated out of Gaza. There were plenty of apple orchards and orange orchards and all sorts of stuff in Gaza that was operating. And the Jews of Gaza were making lots of money from that. And there were rich Jews in the United States who said, hey, look, this is a perfect time for the Gazans to restart and reboot their economy and be autonomous in a Palestinian state, which is essentially what Gaza became. Israel moved out, and Gaza could have become Palestine and could have lived peacefully side by side with Israel. There would have been a beautiful synergy between the two countries. They could have shared in trade. They could have shared in resources. They could have shared in workers. And that whole area could have become the Mediterranean of the Middle East. It could have become the Riviera of the Middle East. But that wasn't to be because Hamas decided that these coastal towns that were evacuated by the Israeli government were a perfect launching pad for terrorist attacks against Israel. Because the goal on the Hamas side, the goal on the Palestinian Authority side, isn't to live in peace, in harmony, and coexist with the Israelis. It's to eradicate the Israelis and steal their land. This is the goal. And you can see this goal. It's quite clear when you look at their pictures of Palestine, when you look at their pendants, and when you look at all the paraphernalia they have promoting their Palestinian cause. They are very clear that they want the entire country, that they're not interested in piecemeal. They're not interested in making a land deal. They're not interested in cutting off a part of the country. From the river to the sea, when they say that, they mean it. They want the country from the river to the sea, which means that the Jews of Israel, as Gamal Abdul Nasser said, when they started chanting river to the sea, he was the first one to introduce that phrase, that Israel would be eradicated from the river to the sea. He was the president of Egypt. When he said, we're going to push the Jews into the sea, that's exactly what he meant. He didn't mean that, we're going to push them into the sea onto a boat and have them go back to Europe or go back wherever they came from. That's not what he meant. When he pushed the Jews into the sea, he meant genocide. We're going to kill them. We're going to murder the Jews of the region because they're infidels and they have to be killed. So when they call for the globalization of the Intifada, when they call for the murder of the Jews in the streets. When they call, when they actually chant, kill the Jews, there is no reason not to take them seriously. And when Donald Trump says that he's going to recognize a Palestinian state, that is giving the go-ahead, the green light, to the Jew haters living in America to go to phase two, to kill the Jews. I know, another depressing show. I get it. I try not to be as depressing as this. But sometimes you have no choice. This is the world we live in. It is a very unfortunate, very scary world we're living in. And to be a Jew in today's world is extremely, extremely, extremely scary. There are many, many, many Jews who have taken their mezuzahs off their doors. There are many Jews who have taken their kippahs off their heads when they walk through the streets or when they go onto the subway. The chief rabbi of France a couple of years ago actually ordered the Jews of France to not show that they're Jewish, to wear baseball caps, and to not wear identifiably Jewish clothing in public for fear that they would get attacked. Imagine having to hide your identity because you're Jewish. Imagine having to hide your identity. I didn't think this would ever happen in my lifetime. I really didn't believe that after nearly just about 80 years after there was a genocide, a mass genocide, where an entire continent turned against the Jewish people and put them into factories, killing factories, and murdered them en masse, that there would still be movements to call for the destruction and the murder of the Jewish people. It's really unbelievable to me. It's unfathomable. But this is where we're at. We're back there again. We're back at the situation where they're calling for the murder of the Jewish people. And we sit quietly and we say, yes, this too will pass. But we know that the last time we said that, Jews were herded into gas chambers and crematorias. If the walls of the gas chambers of Birkenau and the ovens of Auschwitz could speak, they could tell stories of Jews who said, you know, we've had a worse. This is not the worst that could happen to us. It's time. It's time for our governments to stand up. It's time for us to hold them accountable. It's time for governments to stand up and start saying, Jew hatred is not acceptable, not in any democratic country, not in any Western country, not in any European country. Jew hatred is not acceptable. And the people who are preaching Jew hatred, the people who are promoting Jew hatred, the people who are promoting genocidal attacks against the Jews have to be stopped, have to be taken care of. And I don't care how you take care of them. You want to lock them up, lock them up. You want to shoot them, shoot them. It doesn't really matter to me. But they have to be eradicated. This whole philosophy of kill the Jew has to be eradicated. The most disturbing part of this whole thing is that if it was any other minority group, if it was a movement to kill the blacks, or a movement to kill the Greeks, or a movement to kill anybody else, there would be riots in the street. The politicians would be falling over each other, trying to figure out how to solve this problem. Commissions and inquiries and added protection, the army protecting communities, etc., etc., etc. Any other minority group would have the protection of the government, would have full protection. But Jews have to beg for it. Jews have to beg to be protected. They have to pay billions of dollars to security companies to upgrade their buildings, to upgrade their security cameras and whatever else, with no help at all from governments, no help at all from the police. And every time a Jewish community institution is attacked, every time a Jew is attacked, the spokesman for the government gets up and says, we condemn this act of violence against the Jewish population, and we also condemn Islamophobia, which means that Jews can't even stand alone in their hatred, in the hatred that's expressed against them. Politicians can't even bring themselves to just condemn Jew hatred. They have to lump it onto something else that doesn't even exist. And that's where the Jewish population stands now in North America and in Europe. And because we are standing on the grounds of this is unacceptable behavior and it's unacceptable reaction from the government, because we're standing on such shaky, shaky ground, then we have to know that that we have to take care of it ourselves. We have no choice. And so what's taking care of it ourselves? Well, increasing our security, hiring security guards, hiring, you know, changing the way our buildings are run. But nobody even considers that the way to take care of it is to get out, to leave, to flee the countries that are hating you, to give them their wish, to let the enemy win, to give them their wish, and to go home. I think that's the only solution. I don't think we have any other solutions anymore. Jewish population is at a point where we don't have a choice. I'm Howie Silberger. This is Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. I do appreciate it. I will see you again next week right here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You can check out the website, IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You can email me, Howie at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You see, there's a lot of IsraelNewsTalkRadio.coms in this closing speech because that's where we're at, IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thank you so much, and I will see you next time right here on Political Hitman on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.